Hello, everyone, and welcome to CineQuest Video. Today, we're talking about a new Ghostbusters movie, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. All right, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. This film takes place a few years after Afterlife, conveniently. Yep. So, and we do follow the same family from the first revamping, the Spanglers. Yep, yep. And they're back in New York, thankfully, right? We couldn't like not have the fucking fire place. The Ghostbusters headquarters.
The firehouse?
Firehouse, yeah. The headquarters of Ghostbusters. Yeah. And we start off immediately with them like taking on a call and roaming through the streets.
Yeah. I mean, like they really just sort of expanded the family dynamic in all of this, where it's just, it's all camp, where it's like, oh, you're not old enough. Or no, like, I want to drive. I'm an adult, you know, with Finn Wolfhard's character. So I will say about this that I like is that I like they seem to have a lot more dialogue between them. I don't know. I don't remember as well, but Finn Wolfhard's character in the first one,
he had more of a role in.
Yeah, he had more of a role in this one. He had more lines, like, and he was more of the comedy relief, which I was like, oh, okay, cool. This fits. Like, this is actually really good. Trevor, right? Because in the one before, he was just annoying. He was just like moody and shit, you know, standard teenager. Oh, I met a girl and I like her. And then it's like, fuck off. And in this one, it's more like now that they're more of a, cohesive unit with Paul Rudd in there sort of as the new dad, they're just like sort of bickering and sort of, you know.
Yeah, but off each other. Just to kind of reiterate about the characters and stuff. We have Phoebe Grace. Phoebe Spangler, who is McKenna Grace. We do have Paul Rudd again. We just mentioned he's the dad, and then Carrie Coon, who's Kaylee Spangler. Again, family dynamic. I didn't really see, like, I know Phil Wolfhard's kind of like more of a bit of a comedy relief, but he really doesn't have much to do in this movie. You know,
no, he's kind of just kind of chilling.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I mean, I don't know if they had really any idea in the story, like, what to do with him. I mean, they have to put him in there kind of, you know, unless they like said, oh, he's off to college or something. But then I'm assuming Finn Wolfhard is still a draw, like, because of the Stranger Things thing. It's still kind of like in its the zeitgeist, I guess.
So, I mean, yes. Yes, that is correct. Probably more than likely they're playing off of his
celebrity, I guess, characters.
Yeah, that. But the thing is that with this one, because like Lucky's character is not there with him, so he's just kind of like, at his point, just he's at the age where he's trying to figure out like what he wants to do necessarily. And like, it's funny because for the most part, he doesn't really want to do anything. He just wants to live and just chill, you know. He's like, I don't, you know, not really going to fucking school, not really like he's got a job, you know, as a Ghostbuster. Nadim's character, Kumail Nanjiani, I don't know the fucking hell that dude's name is, but like, I like their the way that they Trevor and him interact, because they're both basically the same character in this, Nadim is making the joke. He's like, who's the better? He's talking about his family. He's like, who's the better, the brother that goes and takes all the risks, you know, to go to college and become an engineer, or the, you know, the one that stays home without any education, without any drive, and you know, has to tough it out. And he's being sarcastic, of course, like this whole fucking time. And I fucking love his character. He's just like a nonstop fucking, like, you know, run of sarcastic bullshit.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, he's probably the more comedy relief person in this movie.
Yeah, it's a very like low key sarcasm. That means it's always there. It's always like in the background. But like, Trevor Finn Wolfhard's character is like, obviously, you know, the guy that's doing nothing is like the, you know, the more important one, the one that's taking the, you know, the harder life. And Nadim is like, he's just like, Yeah, right. Like, you know, he's like, what do you mean? And then he's just like, okay, no. And then, you know, they kind of like each other after that, kind of, because it's just like, oh, you're both idiots. Perfect. Okay.
Yeah, and that Nadim is like he's pretty much like a reseller, right? Like he pretty much just
sells junk. When they get into his apartment, he's like, hey, you want some shoes? What's your shoe size? And they're like, oh, 10 and a half. Do you think you could fit into an 8?
Yeah.
You know, like I really like him. This movie had a ton of comedy to it, like, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was a lot more. I wasn't expecting it to be that funny. I really wasn't. But like every fucking character in this takes a crack at being hilarious.
Yeah.
Which I fucking like. There are just so many callbacks to Ghostbusters 2 in this fucking movie. I loved it. I was hoping to see just like a few Easter eggs here and there, but like there were so fucking many. And then I was talking with my brother about it as we were coming back. Like, there's this, and this. Like, I'm not going to go into any of it because it's too much stuff. And I don't necessarily want to ruin it for anyone going to check it out. You will enjoy it seeing these things. But, like, I guess the easiest one or most, maybe not the easiest, but, like, a good one that I'd like to point out that, like, maybe isn't quite so obvious is the parallels between the villain in this one and in Ghostbusters 2, Viggo.
Yeah.
Because like they're, you know, like the easiest thing is that they're both like these sort of conqueror, like demon/deities. And they're both fucking sealed. So they're both like, they were both sealed up over time. Like way the fuck Viggo's in a painting. This guy is in like a metal, fucking brass metal ball, you know? And they both want to just escape and just fuck everything up, you know, that kind
of thing. Well, just go off of that. This villain in this movie is brought about because Nadiv's family has been like hoarding this thing.
And there's another reference.
They are
the fire keepers.
The fire keepers, and he sees it like, and he because his he needs money. He goes to try and sell it. And he goes to try and sell it to Ray Stantz, right? Who still has Ray's Occult and is doing his YouTube show.
Yes. Yeah, there it is. The podcast.
The podcasting again.
Favorite part. You're telling me about that and I looked for it. And it's like, my producer tells me I should say this.
Like and subscribe. And while you're here watching, you should like and subscribe to this channel also.
I fucking love Dan Aykroyd's like cheeseball, like radio face and voice. Like he just does, he fucking like immediately hooks in. Oh yeah. Like and subscribe, you know, like he's so fucking like earnest about it.
I mean, I'm glad he's not like hamming it up. Like he did like Tommy Boy. Like, I buy
car parts
for the American Rocky Man. Cause that's what I am. And that's what who I care about, you know?
Yeah.
But I just to keep going off of that. I really enjoyed, and again, it's a good point that you brought up with the villains because I didn't really even think about the comparisons, but yes, that is a good observation. The things about this movie I liked, again, you said the comedy and the interactions with the old Ghostbusters and
both
the new
Viggo
ones,
and this new villain have minions, just like
that's true. Yeah,
you know, they have a main minion. No spoilers or whatever. I did like though when the villain meets Nadim for the first time and straight up goes like, that was more Ghostbusters 1 to me. He's like, are you the fire master? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, not when he first meets Nadim. He goes into the smoke shop and the guy's like, yeah, whatever. It's on the name of the, you know, and he just fucking kills him. I thought that was really cool. I really liked the villain.
Again, I don't want to bring up too much of the Ghostbusters Easter eggs that they have in there, but I mean, they did a lot of things in this one kind of so casually, I would say, like they just kind of threw stuff in there to see like, and it's blatant. I mean, if you've seen any of the Ghostbusters movie, you know, you can, I mean, it's not like completely, it's very blunt. Like it's in your face.
But it doesn't necessarily seem forced to me. Like, I don't know.
I would probably disagree with you on that. I do think it was a little bit forced though. Yeah.
It seems like it was a bit smoother to me. Like, but maybe it's because I'm just like enjoying it too much, you know, like with the mayor, with like basically the same kind of story.
Well, no, like, see, like there's very specific things that I think were forced in this movie. I didn't really have too much of an issue with the fact that they did that, but I just felt that it was just like, it was there for some fan service.
So,
but it was not necessarily to any of the plot, anything going on.
So the way I sort of rationalize it to myself is, yeah, there was a ton of Easter egg shit in there, a lot of nostalgia factoring in. But again, like, when I think of it as the fact is, like, the storyline for this one, it had a main story and then, like, a subplot. And I think the main story was not shot for shot, but pretty fucking close, almost, to Ghostbusters 2. Yeah. Now that I think about it, like, the way the villains interact, the way they go in, their goals, the interactions between the Ghostbusters and the city, the Ghostbusters and, like, how, you know, everything develops, like, that, I think, is... This was just, like, they modernized Ghostbusters 2 and sort of just put it in there again, which is why I don't think it was forced, because it's the same shit just done over again.
No.
The subplot is
when it comes to the actual,
change it up a little.
When it comes to the storyline and, like, they're, you start putting, like, the comparisons to, like, Ghostbusters 2 or, like, the first Ghostbusters, and it's in there. To me, the forced things were, kind of scenes that just weren't necessary, but they just threw it in there again for the fan service. And I'll just give one example. Whenever they're in the library, Ray or Dan Aykroyd is walking through, and then he sees that fucking, like, ghost library. I was like, that right there was obviously, like, that was not necessary. Yes.
It wasn't, but I loved seeing it.
I did too.
Him, like, but he has a double take. He's like, what?
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm all for seeing.
And then it comes up.
The old crew. stuff. And then deja vu moments or whatever. I find it very amusing to be like, what? But again, I don't necessarily think. Okay, I take it back that was the main plot. I think that was, like, the background filler for the main plot. For the main storyline, which had to do with Phoebe's character,
right?
Sort of have more development and
The thing
maturing,
is,
with her relationship with her family and shit.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Is that she's kind of filling in the Finn Wolfhard character that he portrayed in the first one? It's her turn to, like, be the moody emo,
A very sulky, self-centered, very.
Kind of selfish. She's kind of like, it's selfish. It's teenage selfishness, you know, like, where
right.
kind of
it's just teenage angst in that, like, nobody understands her. Like, she's just trying to do the right thing.
Right.
But it's also because it's also in that it is very simplistic. And as a teenager or whatever, as a young person, she's not considering the consequences. She's not thinking far, you know, that far ahead into the future. And it even points that out when, like, her character is sort of like, it's explained to her that it's like, look, you know, you're going to be 18 in 3 years. And then at that point, like, you can do whatever the fuck you want. And her response to that was just like, well, that doesn't seem like it's a long time for you guys because you've already had so many years. But, like, I'm, like, you know, I'm however fuck old she is.
She was 16. She was 15, I believe.
Yeah. And so, like, she's just, like, low-key being, like, snarky and saying, like, aha. And they even pick up on, oh, she's calling us old. Wow, that's so clever. I like that. In this one, they kind of humanize her a bit more and make her seem less like that.
Just a robot.
She's she's a very intelligent, but it's also like she has no social skills. She has no street smarts. She has no, like, real, like, social awareness. Mm-hmm. And, like, I like that Paul Rudd's character and Carrie Coon are just like, yes, we know you're smart, but here's this other thing, like, you're just being dumb about, kind of thing.
Well, since you brought that up, there was a point I wanted to make when you said that, like, you know, she's being, like, kind of selfish, not thinking of the consequences, and being kind of reckless. Right, is that Walter Peck, like, tells it, like, sidelines her, but Whenever he like sidelines her and says like she can't, she's not allowed to do this, I thought to myself, I go, I don't agree with it technically, but I go, it's kind of a good call because she's like in the very beginning of the movie, she's firing the proton pack like crazy and probably killing people who are in like apartments and stuff because she's just like, like it's just firing at will, you know? And she's not thinking of like where the aim is.
That's also not addressed later in the movie because people fucking die in this movie as a consequence of her decisions in that. And that's never addressed.
Yeah,
she's just like, oh, I was tricked, you know. I was trying to like make a friend, and you know, I thought I was finally understood, and it's like, no, bitch, you got a bunch of people killed, but it's cool because family and like we still love you.
And those people were vagrants, and they didn't have any family. They're fine,
right? Yeah, like I saw that, and that's the first thing I thought, like, oh, they're not gonna fucking talk about this shit at all.
No, yeah. I go, literally,
what are the consequences to those actions? No way.
But that's the one thing I was kind of curious about whenever we talked about Kong and the fact that there's a high body count. I go, there could have been a high body count in this movie also, especially whenever like the freeze comes over. I go, I'm pretty sure like that someone surely got stabbed with those icicles that were popping out of the ground. And the fact that it just covers the entire city. I mean, people are definitely dead.
The dude at the smoke shop, the clerk at the very least, got fucked for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, he's dead. He's super dead.
I was like, it kind of reminded me of Terminator, you know, like the whole Sarah Connor just looking for the person and they fucking just killed him. Killed the next person. Who knows how many smoke shop people died because of the fact they couldn't find Nadim, you know?
That's true. But yeah, that's where I kind of am with the story for this. Like, it sort of has two plots. You know, the main being the relationship between Phoebe's character and the rest of her family. Like Gary, Paul Rudd's character, sort of coming into his own and like stepping into like the role of the dad, the dad-do kind of thing. And like, it was a lot of. I really liked their family dynamic and their interactions as how things like just sort of evolve with them. You know, when Callie is telling him like, no, like you need to be more of an asshole. And he's like, I can be mean, you know, and he like takes her like dirty clothes and like throws it on the floor. Yeah. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. Like, and then he's like, all right, hold on. I'll be nice to you. I'll be an asshole to your kids. And she's like, that's what I want. You know, like, fucking great. Like, this movie was very, like, a lot family friendlier than I was
anticipating.
Not really anticipating, but like, it didn't make me cringe so much. Like, the parts that I didn't care for were, of course, like, Phoebe's character, like, coming into her own little realization, her little, like, you know, adventures on her own, I thought were kind of cheeseball because it was just very, very plain, where it's, like, again, she's just angsty, she's, like, trying to understand, but, like, also thinking that she's superior all the fucking time, so, like, she doesn't consider that she could be wrong about something, that kind of shit. When it's just like,
she's very intelligent. That's why, like, she's
right. Yeah,
She's been right about a lot of things.
Right. She's too self-confident.
And the fact that she's that young and that smart, like, and she's smarter than pretty much everyone else around her.
Ooh, you cut out a little there, dude.
Oh, I said she's smarter than pretty much everyone else around her.
Right. Right.
So,
so it leads to. It leads from self-confidence into just arrogance, I guess. And that's where she starts fucking up left and right because she's like, I mean, yes, you have the intelligence, but you don't have the experience. Right. So, like, why the fuck are you going to, like, disregard that kind of thing? Do you want to repeat the same fucking mistakes that your parents did, for example? No? Right, okay, then fucking listen to what they have to say and maybe try not to do that shit. You know, otherwise it's going to suck. Like, learn from someone else's mistakes. And she, in thinking how, you know, above or superior, you know, she is to everyone else around her, because she really does not care for her family, you know, for a while. Even Gary, when she straight up says, yes, you're a scientist, you're the exception, she's still like very fucking like casual about it. Like, all right, look, I know you're smart too, but like, you know, you're old people smart, or you're like teacher smart, or yeah, that kind of shit. And
well, that's just also teenager shit. You know, that's yeah, just teenager yeah. shit. Like, that happens to pretty much everyone. But I think they kind of like she represented what I guess a teenager would.
She did that very well. Yeah,
she did really well with that.
The thing is, like, making me dislike her character in Latin, I was like, okay, good, that it's working the way I thought it was meant to. Like,
yeah, it's good that she has an arc, you know, like where she's like she's shown a severe one. She's shown to be flawed because, I mean, she's a teenager, and just because she has the intelligence doesn't mean that she's like just she's just so strong. She knows everything. She knows that she is a teenager, and that that's showing us that she is a teenager, and she's going through all these like emotional things, and that is something she doesn't know too much about. So that's why
she learned some very hard lessons.
Yes,
yeah. And to me, again, like I thought that was great, because she was sort of the only one with the problem. Everyone else, like, they were all just fine, trying to do their own thing, and like you know, proceed as a family. Finn Wolfhard's character, he's just chilling, fucking around with Slimer, you know.
Well, yeah, that's another thing where the force aspect is like, I like seeing Slimer, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, like, they didn't really have much for Finn Wolfhard to do, so they go like, oh, just give him a scene where he's trying to catch Slimer or something, you know, like,
yeah. So I think that just sort of plays into more to my theory again, is that aside from Phoebe's character, the other cast were fitting into the slots of the old guard, the old Ghostbusters 2, people. So, that kind of is fitting to me. I'm not expecting a whole lot of anything to change in that when I think of it that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm cool with that, even though, like, again, it's just one whole big member berries kind of fucking situation. That's why I didn't think it was forced, because again, like, it wasn't its own story. It was the same story.
And
Phoebe's character was the sort of the main plot line to where they, you know, had the actual development, the actual, like, just nuance and whatnot, background, consequences, I guess. So, and yeah, like I just really love the humor. So that was another thing for me. Like it kind of hit all the funny parts. I never had like a moment where I was like, all right, this is dumb, I hate it. Like, it was mostly just like, oh, Phoebe's being a bitch. Okay, got it. Cool.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Well,
this is why
I will say, like, though I had some issues with like the story and the little force aspects, it didn't entirely take me out of the movie. I did enjoy it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was enjoyable. And again, let's talk about we've talked about like the main like family aspect.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the actual Ghostbusters themselves. Like, right now I'm on the TikTok. Or like, I think even Instagram, I've noticed like this bit of a, I want to say, it's not like a resurgence or anything, but like people are talking about how well Ernie Hudson looks.
And how call it a comeback. Yeah, he's jacked as hell, dude.
And they said like, he's like 78 years old?
78,
that's fucking crazy, dude. And he looks fucking amazing. Like,
I bet you
he smells good, too.
We fucking met him.
Yeah, we did.
And he did not look. I mean, he was wearing the jumpsuit and shit, and he didn't look anything like that.
If I find the picture, I'll put it up kind of like right here.
Yeah, I gotta look for mine.
But
he doesn't look like that at all in that, because it's like, loose fitting amazing. And stuff. And then in here.
The thing is, they're showing pictures of him like online and stuff, and some guy was like saying, "Do you see how great he looks?" And like, they're like, he's 78. The thing is, he's like sitting like down with his hands like this, and he's wearing like a short sleeve shirt, like, and he has like a fucking huge ass tricep. He's like, that's a 70-year-old tricep right there. He does. He looks great. I'm actually surprised.
Sun's out, guns out, baby. Just,
yeah. And they were comparing him to the like Dan Aykroyd and how like.
I think what was the joke? I just saw a joke earlier about someone like it was Ernie Hudson's character and Bill Murray standing side by side, and someone was like, I'm so grateful to Bill Murray for like aging 40 years, the 40 years that Ernie Hudson should have had instead of him, you know. And I was like, oh
yeah. Like you can see the wear and tear on Dan Aykroyd, and I mean, let's be fair, Dan Aykroyd was a heavy smoker. If he still smokes to this day, I don't know. But
I think he says in the movie, like he jokes he about it. He's like, smoking, I quit in the 90s. Yeah. You know, I quit smoking in the 90s.
Like, I don't know if you remember that documentary I had, like it's Dan Aykroyd on like UFOs.
Yeah.
And like has that close up of Dan Aykroyd. Like he makes me want to smoke. But like the fact of the matter is that like he's lighting up one after the other during this interview. And they get like a fucking close up of Dan Aykroyd's face, and he is sweating. And he's just fucking lighting up, but like so calm and articulate and stuff like that. This is pre Crystal Skull vodka, so like he didn't have to mention that at every turn or every end of sentence. Yeah, you know,
he's not trying to market it.
I don't know if you in your theater noticed when I went to go see a Late Night with the Devil with Bryce at the AMC. They have a bar in there, and like they have a guy who like mixes the drinks and stuff. They had a special Crystal Skull vodka drink. Mixed drink that they would make you, and they had the Ghostbusters logo and shit. And I was like, what the fuck? I go there. I was like, oh man, this had to be in his contract. They had to throw in some Crystal Skull vodka, like as some kind of promotional aspect to this movie. I was just like, I didn't drink it. I didn't get it, but it looked like a terrible drink. But I just thought it was funny that they had somewhere along the lines of all this Ghostbusters stuff, there had to be some kind of promotional aspect where Dan Aykroyd had a say, and they had to throw in some Crystal Skull vodka in there somewhere.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is one of like the biggest, most marketed franchises out there. Of course, like with the resurgence of these new movies, this new iteration of movies, there has been so much fucking merchandise. Like, there's an Ecto-1 Transformer that I wanted to get for the longest time, and then I came to visit my brother, and he's like, oh yeah, I got it over here. I'm like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. God damn it. Want that shit.
Of course. Why wouldn't there's just like,
that? Yeah. There's like, I mean, there's just been, my point was that there's just been a whole lot of just money to be made on all that shit.
Well, I do like the fact that they,
and I'm there for it. Give me.
Well, yeah. I would love it for sure. I do like the fact that in the movie they do like kind of acknowledge that there was like toys and things whenever the Ghostbusters first came out, like they had like that whole aspect to it, which I feel personally would have done the original the remake of the 2016 version some justice if they had just acknowledged the old Ghostbusters and carried on with the same story, like they could have done it a little bit better. But since they just decided to completely annihilate the original movies, and in the fucking trailer, I still remember that they kind of like alluded to the fact that Ghostbusters, the name Ghostbusters, had become like kind of a slur in a way, because like you know, they had like the Ghostbuster tagged on the subway and shit like that.
Oh yeah.
But like it made it seem like the world knew who the Ghostbusters were, and then these new female Ghostbusters were going to take over. But they just since they didn't do that, I feel like if they had done enough to where like they would have brought the old Ghostbusters back and interacted with them that way, people might have liked that movie. But since they didn't, they don't.
Yeah, they didn't. It just so I was trying to think of like.
But also, they didn't really have a story. They didn't really have a story either. They were like,
no, they didn't.
They were improvising like a lot of shit. Like, didn't make any sense. You know?
This is the situation, and the easiest comparison I could think of, it just popped in my head now. For that one, the 2016 one, is that it's an SNL movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And all of the SNL movies, with some exceptions, are shit. Like, how many fuck? And by I say SNL movie, I mean like you know, where they take the comedians that were all on that show and they put them in a movie, and it's like, it's trash.
There are a few exceptions, obviously.
Of course.
I don't want to talk too much about the 2016 version, but I do like the the characters that they have, or the comedians that they had playing those Ghostbusters. Yeah. I like them.
They're fucking hilarious. Leslie Jones, fucking hilarious. Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah, Kate McKinnon, I think is her name. And then
Kate McKinnon.
The other, the main one.
I forget the other name, but like they are fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
They are absolutely funny fucking people. Objectively hilarious. This was none of that.
Like, yeah.
It's just,
but,
anyways,
moving on from that, I just did. I liked the interaction with the old Ghostbusters, new Ghostbusters. It was nice to see Janine for a bit.
Yes.
It was nice to see.
I liked the little comment that Bill Murray's character makes when he comes in there and sees her. He's like, Janine, you finally suited up. You're looking sporty. You know, yeah. It's like fucking hitting on her and shit. And he like walks over to the wall, bah, takes out the bottle of liquor. Yeah, I want some liquor courage. Anyone? Like that was. Again, like the reason I don't think it was any of these things were forced is because they were so smooth, man. Like it's just fucking coming in there, and like, and when that moment happens, I was like, okay, it's either going to be Bill Murray or it's going to be Rick Moranis, and I knew it was going to be Bill Murray. I was hoping it was, you know, Rick Moranis might have had
Rick Moranis not going to show up in this.
No,
movies.
He's not. But so I was still pretty happy.
I did think that Bill Murray was in this just enough to make him seem like he's having a good time, and he's not going to get pissy about being in like a Ghostbusters movie, you know, like he had like
just
two scenes
in there just to have some fun.
He was somewhere in the middle, and then like at the end, and that was it.
His scene with Nadim was really funny.
Yeah.
When like, you know, he's testing him, and he just immediately starts pissing him off. Yeah. I'm like, where's he getting all these pens? Like, I love it. Keep going. Like, there's nothing there. It just seemed like Bill Murray was like, all right, let's let him write a scene for himself and some shit. You know,
I did like the. Again, the fact that Ray and Winston had bigger roles in this movie.
Yeah.
You know?
They had a lot more direction. They had a lot more of their own sort of, I guess, background and like goals in this one. And they do both have moments where like they kind of talk to each other and kind of reflect on what's been happening with the, you know, with themselves and like what they're hoping to look forward to kinds of things. And, you know, like Ray at one point is telling him, he's like, man, you want to go somewhere and spend your golden years, you know, like on the beach and relaxing and
Winston telling Ray that,
and Ray's like, "I'm spending my golden years the way I want to. Like, this is what I love, you know, kind of thing." And I liked that sort of conversation with him because, you know, at that point, Winston's just like, "Okay." And then later on, they sort of like reconcile, like, "Well, golden years," and he's like, "Yeah,
yeah,"
like doing their thing.
Well, I mean, they still have enough like energy in them to at least. Do some ghost busting.
Yeah. To an extent. I mean, like, cause at that point as well, Ray's character, he is starting to realize that, like, okay, maybe I fucked up a bit, like involving the people around me. And like, he kind of has like a Phoebe moment or whatever in this one where it's like, okay, I got to like fucking focused on myself or whatever. And not realizing that, you know, these actions, the consequences of my actions and shit. You know,
yeah, because I know, like Ray in the original Ghostbusters was more of like the more of the reckless one. You know, he would kind of just go off and kind of do stuff. Right. I know Bill Murray's character was kind of just, I guess he was more reserved, and of course, Egon's more like he's the science, like he's a more rational person and these types of things.
Oh, but Winston is always the voice of reason.
Right.
He always has been. And like, he continues to do that. Yeah. It's just that in this one, they give him more of a leading role because he's the boss, which is kind of a cool, like, flip, I think. Yeah. Because he's very fucking, like, he's very organized. He's very structured. Like, he's very goal-oriented. Like, everything about his character is, like, very well put together by this point. He's just like, all right, we got shit to do. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Without going into spoilers or anything like that. Like, he really does. And it's, what I think is interesting about it is that it just kind of, like, it doesn't hint at any of this. You're just like, you start in the movie asking these kind of questions, like, where's Ray? Or what's the shit? Like, what was supposed to be happening with before? And then it happens. And you're like, fuck. Okay, cool. Yeah. Like, goddamn. Which I like. I like how that was handled, because he goes again from being the part-time backup, you know, the part-timer to the guy in charge.
That was cool. I did like that.
He's calling all the shots.
He was just initially the hired hand in the original movies, and now he's like the guy who's running the place.
He's the guy. I mean,
and also considering, Peter Venkman is like still kind of like floundering around, and Ray's just kind of like stuck in his like little own little world, like with the the bookstore, and then of course his YouTube thing. But
research.
without Winston, like none of this would have been possible, to be honest. Because I mean, if he didn't keep on going in the background and like you said, building himself up and all this other kind of stuff, like he's the boss, he's the guy in charge now. So it without Winston, like most of these things would not have been able to occur. So.
Yeah, he's responsible for a lot of these things, like being able to like become. Being able to even be a thing, like to be to develop within like the Ghostbusters organization, it's like the whole story itself as it further goes into the movie. One of the articles or some of such the titles I've been seeing is like he's the heart of the team, and it's like kind of he's sort of like the bedrock,
the voice of reason, you know, like he's like
right the voice of reason. Yeah. He's sort of like the anchor for everything that just sort of keeps it all together, and lets all of these other new Ghostbusters and all of his other buddies do their own keep doing their own thing in their own little world and their own little ways. It's because he's there like sort of managing things in the background. He's not pulling the strings. He's literally just like building shit for them to like fuck around. They're the ones that are like completely unaware or oblivious, I should say, to all of the work he ends up doing. Just I thought was pretty amusing.
Well, that is to say, Roland, I mean, you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I do recommend if you're a Ghostbusters fan in general, I feel like you would enjoy this movie, and the new characters wouldn't take away from like any sort of aspect.
They really
of
don't.
Love
they
you
really
have don't. Of the original Ghostbusters.
They really don't, because like again, with the exception of Phoebe, because her character has like her own sort of direction and lines dialogue that's sort of specific to her. The family, like, they've got great lines. They've got a great relationship with each other. Like, they're very, like, they're just, they work well together.
You know, as cheesy as this line was, I still liked it, even though they showed it in the trailer. Whenever Paul Rudd is, like, talking to the mom, and she's like, just don't say it. And he's like, Bustin' makes me feel good. Like,
it's stupid and cheesy. She's like, who are you going to call? Yeah. She's like, he's like, wait, I've got one more thing to say. It's important. What? And then he says that, and she's like, get out. Like, fucking, I love it. Yeah. Like, she's fucking hilarious. It's good. Yeah, I mean, Paul Rudd is, as always, a national goddamn treasure, and
I'll say Paul Rudd and Ernie Hudson are, like, the youngest looking adults in the room, and probably like the oldest for most of them, you know.
I really enjoyed this movie. Like, they're really, again, like, I know you think, I guess some of it was forced, but the way I look at it is it had two sort of interweaving plots,
right? You know? But like I said before, like, I do feel it was forced, but it didn't take me out of the fact that I still enjoyed seeing those things. But I will have to acknowledge that some aspects of this movie are obviously not in any way integral to the plot, and some of the characters necessarily aren't again integral to the plot. Also, you could take some of them out and the shit will still like happen as is, you know. But they're there, I enjoyed them, and I just kind of moved on. And because I think I was more enamored with the fact that Ray and Ernie Hudson were kind of in there more, and I was just like like brought me back into it. Not if it was just a family, maybe, and they were just kind of like not there, the fact that they're there and they're all their interactions like helped me.
Like they were part of the greater story.
Yeah.
To that, and like that was pretty cool and fitting for the most part, because they had already had, they've already established a ton of shit, you know, from all the original movies coming up to this one. So it fits well, and I'm sort of glad that they sort of used them in that aspect.
Yeah.
If that makes any fucking sense. It probably doesn't. It's good beer.
Anyways.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. All water for me, unfortunately. So, yeah, I know. if so you like this review, please like and subscribe. I would say check it out in theaters if you can before it's out. I know Afterlife isn't, I don't think Afterlife is streaming anywhere, not to my knowledge. But I mean, I would say get yourselves copies of these movies because who knows if they ever will
watch them again.
See the light of day. I mean, have your Ghostbusters 1 and 2. It's your choice if you want to have the 2016 just to complete the package. And then throw in Afterlife and then Frozen Empire on top of it. I real quick, before we sign off, I did feel the villain was a little weak, but not too much weakness to throw me out of the movie. I should have mentioned that earlier. But anything else last thing to say?
I thought the villain was cool. I can understand what you're saying, though, necessarily.
Anything else to say on the before we sign off?
Wait for the Steelbooks.
In fact, go to Walmart. They have plenty of Steelbooks available. And, well, it's actually like when I went to Walmart the other day, like they were sold out of a lot of shit. Hence why I picked up Little Monsters.
That's right. So. Good shit.
But check out Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, Ghostbusters fans, non-Ghostbusters fans, whatever. This movie will be forgotten pretty quickly because I didn't see, there was no one in the theater when I went. And I haven't seen like it. I don't know the numbers on it right now, but like there's so much shit coming out this last couple of weeks in March, and then Godzilla came out this week, and then I know Kung Fu Panda's out too, and that might take away from the whole child aspect of it.
I was reading an article about how like it's already taken a chunk, but like the thing is they've already made a lot of money as well. Let's see. I mean, they've already passed their budget.
No, that's
fine. Box office.
Fine.
There was a 100 as at the minute that I'm looking at this, it's probably old already, or more than that. But they made 110 million in the box office, and their budget was 100 million. So,
that's good.
At this point, it's just profit for them.
All right. Well, that'll be it for us. We'll see you next time on the next review. I'm not sure which one will be next, but you should get a Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 coming from me because this month we missed it. So
God, I'm so pissed off.
We'll see you next time.